Welcome to Real Flix Reviews. We're like a book club for people hate reading. This month we're doing Grab Bag, so Ryan picked the movie Tim's Vermeer. It's a documentary made in 2003. This week we have Jonathan Charney and James Hello. Stevens. Tim's Vermeer is made in 2003. Inventor Tim Jensen seeks to understand the painting techniques used by a Dutch master, Johan Vermeer. This is a Penn and Teller movie directed by... I'm a big fan of documentaries. Unfortunately, Ryan couldn't be here. He had to pick someone up. I was actually really surprised. Not only was this not a painter I was familiar with, but how much kind of hate the people gave this guy for... And so pretty much what it is they think Vermeer used optics to paint.
Which is way ahead of the time.
And so it explains the technique. I don't want to get too much in the weeds there. But the reason I say he got hate is because people like, oh, no, you have to do it from imagination and do this.
Yeah.
And a very high regard for art when I actually think what the dude did matched the painting.
Oh, I did too. And I mean, the way he did it, it was amazing. Unfortunately, Ryan can't be here. I kind of wanted him on this one because he and I are big fans of Penn & Teller's Bullshit, which was an HBO show, and they do it the same way where they actually make it entertaining. Unfortunately, Ryan has to go pick up someone that's quite the stiff these days. But to get back on point, I agree with you that there was a lot of resistance to what this guy was doing. As far as I'm concerned, this is just kind of a documentary on what to do when you have too much money.
I was going to say,
because he spent years doing this.
To quote Jay Leno, this is, you know, he's a member of the More Money Than Brains Club.
Yeah.
So what he used.
I love how hands-on he is too.
That was the cool part. He used what's called a camera obscura. Pretty much what it does is you use a hole in a small room and it kind of projects what's on the other side of the small box. And so using some lenses and a few other techniques, he was able to reproduce what he thinks Vermeer did. What it is, it's a mirror at 45 degrees. It allows you to match the tone quality or the color of whatever object you're painting.
Yeah.
I have to say, is this the first time we've done a documentary?
I actually think it might be.
Because I was trying to figure out, how do we talk about it without really spoiling everything? I mean, I realize it's kind of what we do on the show, but it's really hard not to rehash the entire documentary.
No, it is, and that's kind of the way we have to do it, because this is more of a documentary than a movie, and, you know, you have different things. But I think what the guy did was genius as far as what he took on. I really love the way Penn and Teller approach things like this, where they do it very unbiased and let you see what the situation is and make up your own mind.
No,
and that's kind of what they did. That is what they did here.
No, I'm totally with you. They actually, they basically gave the guy a platform, and obviously the guy, the Penn and Teller and this guy are friends.
Yeah.
But I like the fact they let the story unfold. They didn't bias you. The only thing I think they kind of biased you, and I think it was a perfect way to set the stage, was saying that this Tim Jensen is smart.
Yeah.
And not, you know, oh, he's smart. I mean, this dude's, he's a mad scientist.
Yeah.
He's the inventor of one of my favorite items that we use in the studio, the TriCaster, which hopefully in a couple of weeks, we just got it back, by the way. So hopefully we'll be setting up. We got to rearrange the studio a tad bit. So this dude's intelligent. The other thing that I think he was the perfect guy to really kind of dial this technique in is he's a video guy.
Yeah.
So he's not a painter. So he's not biased in techniques, but he knows color. So he has an eye for telling, okay, this is too dark. This is too light. How do we do this? So I do like the fact the guy was able to do it that way. Because I think a painter in some ways might be too biased too much. Well, he wouldn't do this or he wouldn't do that.
Well, that's the other thing I like. And I love the fact that he's got natural talent as well. And that kind of gets shown when he brings in an artist and says, you know, look at this. This is what I'm thinking about going with. It was one of his test stages. And he told him, you know, it took me like half an hour to master the brush. And the guy goes, well, it's taken me years to do that.
Yeah, it was more along the lines of like, oh, good for you. It took me 40 years to learn how to do that.
Yeah, so it was kind of that. I mean, there was, but he did it in a humble way. He never really was like, I'm better than you guys. And then he approached a bunch of artists at the end of the thing and showed them, you know, and he kind of did this thing where he just moved something so that they could see it without getting it biased on it as far as when they approach it. He kind of told them what was going on and then showed them. And I really respect that approach as well because, you know, you get them in there and they weren't harsh on his work either. They were very impressed with it. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think he nailed it. And, I mean, they did it in such a way that you kind of – it's not so much that you get on his side, but you're more engrossed in the journey he took.
Yeah. Definitely. Sorry, I was thinking – so what he did is – I forgot the actual name of the painting. I wish I remembered. So pretty much what it is, this painting takes place in a room, and there's a piano and a girl and an instrument laying on the floor. And so he invented a 3D program.
Yeah.
So he modeled this painting in 3D, reproduced it in a warehouse that he rented, knocked down a section of a concrete wall so he could get the lights right. This was the definition of I have money to do whatever I want. I mean, this guy was definitely I'd say a family motto of mine is why do it a little bit when you could do it a lot?
Yeah.
So he definitely went, you know, feet first.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, it kind of seems like his personality though.
No,
because they do when Penn Jillette was talking and brought up the thing of his friendship with him and was giving you a backstory. You know, even as a kid, he talks about that he learned how to play the piano by taking apart a player piano, fixing it, and then mimicking the keys and learned how to play the piano that way. So the guy's one of those people that he's like, I'm just going to jump full board in this. And that's how he learned how to play the piano by tone.
He also seemed to be one of that guys that actually, like nothing's a failure. It's just like, okay, don't do it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan's comment about this was they made paint dry exciting.
Yeah, and literally they did make paint drying exciting.
The only person...
I mean, I feel for the guy on the details that he went through with the... At one point, he's like, I'm just done with this rug.
That was amazing, too. Like, he literally, like, different colors made a rug look like it does in real life. And this dude spent like 3-4 years doing this.
Yeah.
Like 120 days painting.
There was 250 hours of footage.
It's just amazing. And this guy deserves a lot of credit. I don't know how many people would have went feet first into trying to produce a master's artwork.
Yeah. I think I've almost spent as much time with that he took on all the Elder Scrolls game combined.
I was going to say, I know certain people spent that time trying to set the clock on a VCR.
Yeah.
I'm just amazed. I didn't know Vermeer. The most interesting thing to me about Vermeer is there's not a lot known about him.
Yeah.
I wonder, part of me is wondering, I mean, was Vermeer the guy who painted it too? If it's so obscure, as far as the artist, they didn't know he was probably using optics. There's a whole lot of questions that I find fascinating.
Well, they said there just was no documentation on him or anything, and he didn't really go through an apprenticeship program, which showed that he had done it with a master. There was all these paperwork that he didn't have. So that's why they didn't know much about his processes.
But by the sound of it, it just sounds like the guy just said, hey, look what I made.
Yeah, pretty much.
The lot of difference, great use of English. The major difference is what they showed is he had ability to, it really is what they called paint with light. He did really good on gradients and shadows and depth of field, which on the paintings that they compared it to didn't have the gradients, didn't have the colors, not a lot of depth of field to it. I mean, they were 3D, but this one looked like a picture.
Hmm. Yeah.
So for me on this documentary, I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. This is going to be a short episode, by the way, just because without Ryan, it's I'm not sure how much we can really dial in on a documentary.
I got to agree with you on that. You know, I think I'm just going to keep it at a four because, I mean, this is one of my favorite documentaries so far. I mean, it's not I don't think we've done my favorite documentary. I think John knows which one that is. But, you know, I think like Ryan said is that they made paint drying exciting because you really get behind what this guy is just trying to do. And it's not so much that you want him to be right. You just want him to succeed at what he's doing. Because I didn't feel like he needed to be justified or right in what his process was. I think that I was just behind it to say that's awesome that this guy can come as close as anyone to figuring out what this guy, how this guy did what he did.
One of the reasons I love it because the guys
could do forgeries now.
Probably. One of the reasons I really love this documentary is the guy's kind of like me, but you know, like an alpha geek. Rich, seriously? Jeez.
He's really rich. Yeah, though.
I'm not. No, it's the fact that guy's a geek and he's a much higher geek than I, but it's really cool to see somebody who's just has a passion and is able to fulfill it on a level that honestly, most people, including me listening to this, will never be able to do. So it was just like, you know, I was, as soon as I saw this, it was like, oh, come on, go. Because as a geek, it's all about your passions and what you're really into. Being a geek doesn't mean a computer geek or a movie geek. It's just anything you're really passionate about. I've met people who are plant geeks. I think that's a little weird, but I don't have ability to keep plants alive.
Oh, I thought you said plank.
Plank?
Yeah, like the planking exercise shit. And I'm like, I've seen people that do that a lot, but I've never met somebody who's a geek over it.
Yeah. I've met some strange people on this life, so you never know.
Yeah.
If you're a plank geek, you know, talk to James.
Das Bucha.
Jeez. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to let you know we do have a Facebook page. Is there a movie or a piece of movie news you'd love our spin on? Let us know. Also, you can catch us on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and more. So we're going to switch off into James's pick, and I think I'll let him start the segment.
You know, basically, if you haven't heard of Gargoyles, go out and watch Gargoyles. That's really what I'm going to come down to. It's just these gargoyles are placed under a curse. The curse ends up breaking, and they become alive again. You know, I got to say, this is one of my favorite 90s cartoons of all time. This, if you guys have never heard of this, you got to understand that this is basically the creme de la creme of voice actors in here. You got Keith David, you got Ed Asner, you got Bill Fagerbeck. If you don't know who that is, go watch Coach. You got Jonathan Frakes and even one of his cohorts from, I think that is right.
Deanna Troi.
Yeah,
I can't.
Star Trek. I almost screwed up her name. But Marina Sirtis is in there. Clancy Brown, another great top billed actor. And one of my favorite of all time. If you guys don't know who this guy is, go watch any cartoon from the late 80s up until basically today. Jim Cummings is in this as well. It's just odd the cast alone, but I love the story of this thing too.
So this whole era of cartoons is kind of what I would call like the golden age or second or third golden age of Disney cartoons.
Yeah.
This was in the era for James and I and some of the people listening where there were actual cartoons when you got home from school. And usually on Fridays, there'd be a new episode.
And sometimes on Saturdays, there'd be a new episode. This also got put over there.
And this
Michael Dorn. Jeez.
This was the one with the pack, right?
Yeah, this is the one.
This was the introduction?
No, the introduction, there's like five episodes that talk about the awakening of them coming alive.
The introduction of the pack.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry.
The reason I say that is because the pack is pretty much an enemy they face.
Multiple times.
And this is, I really want to spoil. I'm just going to go. So the coolest thing about this episode is the pack is kind of like a TV show, but these guys are bad guys. They're hunters. And so they find out about the gargoyles.
Yeah.
They try to go after them. Obviously, the heroes kick their ass. The coolest thing about the pack to me is you see them later on, like two of the members of pack basically become cyborgs. Other one wears a suit. Other one gets like genetically modified. So it's kind of like these, basically what it is, it's the freaks, the gargoyles are the normal ones.
It's Team Rocket.
It pretty much. It's just pretty funny how they, you know, later in the episodes, they call them freaks and you're like looking at, it's like, well, they were born this way.
Yeah. But I mean, I just really love this show. It was one of those that was pushing the limits of cartoon violence as well, especially when they get into the Avalon series that they did.
Oh, God. I hated the Avalon part of it. Like, part of it I did.
There were parts of it that were nice, but it just got bogged down with too much story.
It never ended.
Yeah.
It's like, just go back to...
It was like the end of X-Men. The cartoon where they went to the island and all that stuff. And
it had the coolest bad guy in there. Like, well, he was the bad guy for part of the series, but his skyscraper had a castle on top. And he was just a really good, well-written bad guy.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite ones as far as storyline goes. Not this episode, but this series-wise.
And this was in the same, around the same era where you had DuckTales, Tailspin, Bonkers.
Yeah.
Recess.
Freakazoid.
Yeah, Freakazoid. Recess was later on, but it's kind of like when the same era.
Yeah, around the same time. Batman, the animated series was still going. You had Spider-Man going.
X-Men.
X-Men. X-Men was on for like another year or two after this. I think it ended in 97.
So there was an amazing, you know, cavalcade of cartoons. Yeah. And this was one of the crop of the cream.
Yeah, but unfortunately, this series didn't make it past the second season, which I think was one of the worst choices they made.
I think they were running out of story. I mean, well, they even dragged Macbeth into it, which was actually my favorite. I loved the Macbeth tie-in. That was actually my favorite part of the series.
Yeah, there was a lot of nice little things that they threw in there. They even threw in, as we said, Avalon, which ends up bringing in the Knights of the Round Table and King Arthur and things like that. And I just think, this is one of my favorites. I was really excited remember to pick this one. So anyways, audience guys out there, if you don't know about Gargoyles, go look it up. It's actually worth the watch. It's not one of those that is quote unquote a kid's cartoon. This was right around the time they started putting the age little brackets on there. And I think this one, when they redid it in like 98, came out as TVY7 or something like that.
I thought it was 13.
Or 14.
Yeah, 13 or 14.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
It's a great cartoon. If you guys haven't seen it, we suggest watching all the cartoons we
just listed.
We listed.
Don't forget Beetlejuice.
I wonder how well that one's aged.
Oh, probably not that well.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably aged like milk because it wasn't that great of animation to begin with.
No, it really wasn't, but it was funny.
If you guys give me 1 second, I'm going to pick a movie that I've been waiting forever to do. If I remember correctly, give me a second. I think it's a Spanish movie. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. It's really great, you know, podcast when the person, you know, doesn't do their homework right away. Alistair? It's Alastriste. It was made in 2006, starring Viggo Mortensen, everybody's favorite king in Lord of the Rings. Basically, to give a little bit of description, because I don't know how many people have heard of this, because I didn't hear about it until a couple of years ago. Spain in 17th century, Diego Astray, brave and heroic soldier, is fighting under his king's army in the Flans region. His best mate falls in the trap and near death to Diego. Basically, it's a good old sword fighting movie.
All right.
I've heard this described as another Three Musketeers type of movie.
Interesting.
I'm thinking
as long as it's not like the Musketeer.
Are we talking about the remake with the chip?
The Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon guy?
Oh, no. Because like we'll talk about this in the next show.
There's a lot of stuff that goes with the Musketeers. Anyway, so,
ladies and gentlemen.
TV show.
Oh.
We're going to do The Librarian Season 1, Episode 1.
Cool.
It's from 2004. 14, so yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave Tim's Vermeer a 4.5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 4.5 out of 5. James gave it a 4 out of 5. Next week, we're doing Alistrate. I hope I'm saying that right. Made in 2006, along with The Librarian Season 1, Episode 1.
Is that right?
And ladies and gentlemen, for Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston, as always, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.